Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thank you for dropping by today. When you have a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. Our 2026 Best Buy picks are up there. Plus, what did I just review? The Wagoneer S and my review of the Escalade IQ. That's the electric Cadillac Escalade goes live. It should be live now. I'm behind schedule. but it'll be live by end of day tomorrow. That giggle, That audio smirk was Jill Simonello, contributing editor here at ConsumerGuide.com, prolific freelancer and North American Car of the Year juror. Hey!
Hey!
We're getting very close to our last episode of the year.
We are super, super close.
So you know what happens, because we don't skip episodes for the holidays, we find new listeners at about this time of the year.
Yay!
Because other people are taking hiatuses.
No hiatus here. So hi and welcome. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us this week and next week. Next week, special treat, Sam Fiorani is on. I still don't 100% know what Sam wants to talk about, but I'm excited about it.
He's knowledgeable and he talks about cool things, so I'm not worried.
It's more or less a car guy bucket list, like things you should do.
Okay.
And not necessarily bucket list. And it's probably not that intense, but stuff you should do.
Okay.
And I made my own stuff, too, so we're good there. Later in the show, this isn't it. I lost my notes again. Oh, here
well,
we go.
I want to say we're both a little bit out of breath at the moment. I literally swapped cars, like, at 2:57, which is 3 minutes before the show starts, and the guys pull up, and I was just, you know, I thought we were going to do it during the break, and they literally pulled up right as I was getting ready to run up the stairs, and I was like, oh, we're doing this now. Got it. Okay, so I, like, swapped the keys, and I was like, bye, happy holidays.
Those guys. That particular group of auto distributor, always early.
Yeah.
They're always early.
Yeah, like, and they were like 45 minutes early, half an hour early. So.
And they are nice as heck.
They really are.
And every vehicle smells like Windex.
Yeah.
Like it is just spotless. It's got that just detailed thing going on.
Yes.
Later in the show, we're going to talk to Rob Howard, CEO of Kindred Motorworks.
Yes.
Do you remember we talked to Justin Lunny?
Mm-hmm.
So he was converting old cars into electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Howard's group here is doing a similar thing.
Yes.
Different vehicles, but they're also selling full restorations of vehicles with gas engines.
Yes.
So mostly focusing on classic Ford Broncos.
Yes.
That's that small first generation of the Bronco.
And they look so good.
So darn compelling. I love those. I love those. As well as microbuses.
I know.
And then an interesting car that I don't fully understand why it's collectible, but it's great looking, and that's the Chevy Heavy Duty 3100.
But you know, I have to say, I thought that was really clever.
What's that?
The Chevy.
Oh, it's good looking, too.
It's super good looking and just very clever.
So we'll talk about that, but their Facebook page, Kindred Motorworks, is worth checking out.
Yep.
And their web pages, too. And this is one of those things. It's a startup, but they're not fly-by-night by any means.
Mm-mm.
The stuff looks good. The cars look great. And they have cars to sell now.
Yes.
Which is interesting. All right, we'll talk more about that later. A lot of stories, and they're all really darn depressing.
I was skimming through my email inbox this morning and saw some stuff coming out from Automotive News, and I was just like, wah, wah.
I lost my notes, but I don't need notes for this. Two very promising electric vehicles, dead.
Mm.
Dead. The second one's not officially dead, but it's probably dead.
It's probably dead.
So the Ford F-150 Lightning.
Yeah.
After a very brief run, 2022.
Yeah.
Came out in 2022, I think as of 2022. Where do we start? I mean, when they launched that vehicle in 2021, and there was a big event, Dearborn, and you could go there and be in the crowd and be excited about it, and there were like UAW workers everywhere, and everyone was super excited, and there was a huge streaming audience. They're like, yeah, all right, a full-size electric pickup. This is interesting. 2 days after the launch, not the launch, but the official reveal, 2 days after that, Jim Farley, CEO of Ford, announced that they had nearly 45,000 hand raisers.
Right.
People who put down a refundable $100 deposit. By December, they had 200,000 hand raisers. Since that time, they have not sold 100,000.
No, no. Well, you know, so here's the thing, and I may be a party of one here, but I never thought that this was a good idea. It was a great truck. I thought it was an interesting electric vehicle, but doing a full-size electric truck out of the gate was
the
best idea, because truck guys who are going to buy a truck that looks like a truck and, you know, should do truck things, and it didn't have the range and it didn't have necessarily the capability with the range to do truck things.
It had the range, though.
It did not. The truck I drove was supposed to have 320 miles of range.
Yeah.
I only got 160 miles out of it.
I had far better experiences with that. I think the problem with range
was towing. Yeah.
And this was true of everything. This is true of the Rivian.
Yeah.
This is true of the Cybertruck.
People aren't necessarily going to tow with the Rivian. The Rivian is positioned as a lifestyle truck. And I think that if Ford had positioned this more as a lifestyle truck instead of a work truck, it would have been much more successful.
Well, maybe. And that was a point I was just going to get to. I'm not entirely sure that people who bought into this early weren't lifestyle people.
Yeah.
I think that people doing the business thing are going to be a little bit more cautious about
yep.
it. But I'm still surprised by the terrible sales. I had a chart here someplace that I lost.
You just cannot find your notes today.
But one of the interesting things was that it didn't sell terribly. Like compared to the Cybertruck or the Rivian, it's selling better.
Compared to electric trucks, yes.
But on the other hand, as a percentage of total F-Series sales, dismal.
Yes.
Dismal. And the best year was last year. They sold about 35,000. Looks like this year they're going to sell 25,000. So not drop in the bucket stuff.
No.
But also not enough to open a brand new factory like they were going to.
And to keep going.
Yeah. So the plan seems to be to skip a couple of years. And then for the 2028 model year, maybe they've got a new vehicle coming out that will be an extended range electric vehicle.
So does this mean that Stellantis was right? With their Ram Revolution and their extended range vehicle, they didn't come out with an electric truck, and then
there were steps to that. They didn't come out with an electric truck with high range. Then they didn't come out with the electric truck at all, and then they're going to rename
the Ram Rev.
So that's where they're at. And here's my question to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
So now instead of electric pickups, mm-hmm. both Stellantis and Ford have committed to these
extended range
yep. electric. And for people who don't know what we're talking about, if you think plug-in hybrid, you're really, really close.
Yeah.
It's just a slightly different mechanical situation, but they are basically plug-in hybrids, generally with more range, and there's some things there for added efficiency. But we should probably have someone come on one day and just talk about how those work.
Yes.
And that's one of those things I say that I will not follow up on.
So hashtag Jill needs to follow up on that. Got it.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. But I'm wondering if there's actually a market there for that.
I think there is, because if a truck can do truck things and you don't have to worry. So another problem with an electric truck is if you're going to do truck things like tow with it, the current electric infrastructure is not set up to do a pull through. So then you have to ditch your trailer or whatever it is you're towing in the parking lot, then go hook up to your electric thing. So with this, you can charge at home. You can, fill the gas tank with your extended range, whatever. And then you don't need to rely on the electric infrastructure. So, I think it has potential to be
the infrastructure does not support trucking. So
no.
Trucking needs to support the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, you probably need a relatively expensive cable. An extender cable, which I don't think are made yet. We have adapters.
Yeah, but even so, if you don't have a pull through, what are you going to do with your trailer when you pull up to the, it's going to stick out into the parking lot?
Who were we just talking to about this? And this was about people with non-pickup truck electric vehicles pulling up to Tesla, and that the Tesla charging cables are too short.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing that needs to be fixed. And for people who don't know, Teslas are designed to be backed up into the charging station, and they need a very short cable.
Right. Well, and so now with all of the other automakers going next, so Hyundai, I think Ford, Kia, Stellantis, they've all got, agreed to move to North American charging standard. And they all have ports in very odd locations.
And
some in the front,
different
some
locations.
In the back, some are on the right, some are on the left. Yeah.
I think by far the best location is front driver's side fender.
Okay.
I like that one best.
Okay.
And that can get you pretty close to stuff.
Yeah.
Also, you're not backing up.
Yeah.
Which you don't want a lot of people doing.
That's fair.
So the F-150 Lightning, We hardly knew you. About 100,000 of those are going to be built.
Yes.
And that's it.
Future collectible?
Possibly. It depends how well they're used and beat up.
Right.
Speaking of that, the Volkswagen ID. Buzz.
Yeah.
Here's a thing that we need to learn. If journalists are screaming for something, ignore them.
Yeah. that would be fair. Brown station wagon with a manual transmission. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
That's an old Volvo story we have. I'll have to retell that. Dan Johnston told me that story.
Yeah.
About journalists wanting crazy stuff that no one else will buy.
Yes.
But the ID. Buzz, Volkswagen's delightfully plucky all-electric minivan, which looks like an old school microbus, has already been discontinued or put on hiatus. There's not going to be a 2026 model year, but there's word coming from dealers, and I haven't been able to get a better source than that. Just dealers are saying it ain't coming back at all.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a couple of problems with that, and we had...
I think there were three problems.
There were two big problems.
Though I love the vehicle.
And I think there was a third one that cropped up this year. But the first two problems were range and price. The range wasn't as good as people wanted, and the price was a little bit higher than people were willing to pay.
No, that was a lot higher.
And, well, I was being kind. And I think the third problem was with tariffs coming in, like, the prices got even higher.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about the tariffs.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the fact that there's really no space, no storage space behind the third row.
Like,
it's grocery
shelf
space. It's not taking a family on vacation space. You could not use that vehicle to take a family of six on a week-long vacation.
Well, you wouldn't anyway because the range is abysmal.
Because the range was a problem. And all of this is a crying shame because the vehicle was delightful.
It is delightful in so many ways, from the colors to the interior features, the movable center console,
It looked great. It was fun to drive. It was quick. The range was actually the range. Like, I was doing pretty good in driving that thing. There's nothing about that vehicle I didn't like, actually, dynamically.
Mm-hmm.
But the price was a pain, and there was two levels to that price problem. First, $62K, a lot of money for a minivan.
Yes.
You can get a seriously loaded Cadillac-quality luxury Pacifica for...
Yeah, the Pinnacle.
...for less than that money.
Yeah.
I think in hybrid, actually.
Maybe.
I think you can get the plug-in hybrid. So... you can get an awful lot of other minivan for that money. And the other price point was that at the base price point of $62,000, you couldn't get the fun colors.
Right.
They restricted the color availability.
Yeah.
And I think if you were drawn to this vehicle...
you want the colors!
You want the dang green or the orange or the yellow.
Yeah, the bright yellow and the blue and the... yeah.
Those are great
orange
colors.
Yeah.
You wanted those.
You wanted those.
Your neighbors wanted you to have those.
Yeah.
They brightened up a neighborhood.
They really did. They made you happy.
And the thing about this that was so tragic, too, and people don't really know this unless you really follow the industry, and that's that Volkswagen headquarters in Germany doesn't always play ball with Volkswagen North America.
Right.
And North America wanted, I believe, the short wheelbase version and less expensive versions, and none of that made it here.
Yep.
And there was some really complicated thing about getting the short wheelbase version, and they dragged their feet. And I think a lot of the interest in the vehicle may have died in like the 3 years we waited to get it to U.S. shores.
Yeah, I feel like we've been seeing that at auto shows for a really long time.
Yeah, so that was crazy.
Yeah, that makes me sad, but it's not entirely unexpected.
Last week, we forgot to say Happy Hanukkah.
You know what?
And now it's over.
It is. Last night was the eighth night.
Yeah. It always dances sometime around Christmas, and I never quite follow it.
I had it in my notes to wish people Happy Hanukkah, and then... forgot.
But this is the Christmas episode.
Yes.
So Merry Christmas.
Well, yeah. Or I mean, so my husband is Jewish, and so I could say, you know, Happy Christmaka.
Uh-huh.
He Christmas and Hanukkah. We celebrate both.
As you should.
Yes.
More stuff.
Yes.
Better food.
Actually, yes.
Speaking of food, and this is 100% off topic.
Okay.
Yesterday was my daughter's birthday.
Happy
26 to my kid.
Yes.
And we went to a place called Bombay Chopsticks.
I saw photos on Facebook.
Oh, man. We've been there before.
Yes. No, I saw the ones you posted yesterday.
And someone asked me if this was like an Indian-Asian fusion thing, and it's not.
Okay.
It's a restaurant that has two distinct menus, two actual different physical menus, one Indian, one Chinese.
Hmm.
Here's the thing about that. The Indian menu is fantastic and pretty traditional. The Chinese menu is entirely Indian versions of all Chinese things.
Oh, that's funny.
My mother ordered chop suey, I think it was, and it was red. Like, that's wrong.
That should not be.
That's wrong.
That should not be.
But it was delicious.
That's good.
So anyway, I think I won a bet.
You did.
The Ram mid-sized truck will be called Dakota.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was a bet.
So that's the first.
I was talking about the fact that I owe you lunch.
No, not that. Actually, I don't think it was much of a bet. I think it was just a prediction.
I had hoped they would call it Dakota, but I didn't know because like Dodge Dakota rings, but like Ram Dakota doesn't necessarily.
Right. It's actually a different brand. There's never been a Ram Dakota.
And so I thought they would do like Rampage or something like that.
Yeah, which is a perfectly good name.
And a name they already use.
Yeah, there's history there. Yeah. Also, I think Rampage is used south of the border. Mm-hmm. Is that currently Mexico or Brazil?
I think it's Brazil.
Yeah. So lots of these fun, cool unibody small trucks running around south of our border.
Yes.
They would never pass crash testing up here. There was a Chevy Tornado, too, which is a cool little two-door pickup. All right. You recently drove the
Ford Maverick Lobo.
I forgot which car we were going to talk about.
No, and that's literally the vehicle that I was swapping out 3 minutes before the show started.
I want to drive that. And tell me I'm right.
You are right. It is a thoroughly enjoyable little truck. So this, if you're not familiar, the Ford Maverick, compact truck from Ford, the smallest truck that they make, unibody.
I think if you're Mexican, you're confused right now.
Yes, because the Ford F-150 in Mexico is called the Lobo.
In some trim levels.
Yes. No. The actual F-150 is called the Lobo.
Oh, but I thought there was like a higher end line of F-150s.
Okay. To make things even further confusing, they came out in the United States with a Ford F-150 Lobo this year.
Yes.
Trim in the United States.
And is it the same kind of sporty upgrade?
I think so.
All right, cut you off. Go back to explaining what this is.
So the Maverick compact pickup truck, and the Lobo is a street truck. So lowered suspension, throatier exhaust, some fun torque vectoring, kind of a fun to drive vehicle. I was at the vehicle launch probably about 6 months ago now, and they actually had us autocrossing this truck, and it was so much fun. And so this time around, I took a road trip in it, and I was like, okay, it's fun to drive, but how does it stand the test of time in terms of, driving 400 miles? And it does really well also in a road trip situation in terms of fuel economy. Like highway fuel economy, EPA estimated is 30, and I was getting 29,
which is really
good considering the fact that I drive 70 miles per hour because that's the speed limit on I-65 heading, to and from Indianapolis. So fuel economy was good, and the seats were really comfortable, and visibility is really good, and, I think in most cases, it is the truck that most people need. You've got, I want to say it's either a 4 or 5 foot bed, so plenty of space for if you need to go to Home Depot or the gardeners and, get some mulch and things like that. But it's still small enough that it fits in tight city spaces and it's very maneuverable and just easy to drive.
So the price point is interesting. Because there's two Lobos.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Lobo Standard and a Lobo High.
Mm-hmm.
They just call it High? Is that right?
I was like, which one did I? Because I had the, they didn't make the distinction on the sticker sheet. It's just the Lobo all-wheel drive, and it has the 2.0 liter EcoBoost engine.
So maybe that's the base. But there's a Lobo Standard that starts around 37 grand and a Lobo High that starts around 43 grand. 43 grand sort of annoys me. A lot of money for a Maverick. But you get the fun stuff. Car and Driver got the car to 0 to 60 in 5.8 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is pretty quick.
Yeah.
And you get a bunch of fun stuff with it.
Yeah.
The lowered suspension, the body kit, the blacked out trim, the LED headlights.
Special grill.
Yeah. And this one's interesting. Mach-E steering. So they took the steering system from the Mach-E to apply that here, which is supposed to get you a tighter, more accurate, sportier feeling steering system. So that's cool.
Yeah, and it includes a lot of the high-end features that you, like options. Like, so the vehicle I had must be the high option because it was $42,445 as tested, no options.
Okay.
And, and it includes things like a wireless charger, the really large infotainment screen, wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It's one of those things, and it has like the vehicle I drove was black, but it had like the black painted roof, so you couldn't tell, but that was, one of the nice features on it. And so it just has like all of the things that you like, heated seats, heated steering wheel. You know, the things that you would want on a vehicle that is going to be comfortable and kind of high-end.
I'm hoping these sell well. I mean, a lot of the car culture that I used to enjoy as a younger man is gone.
Yeah.
But one of the things that came out of the 80s, in the 70s too, but more so the 80s because they got better engines, were things like the Chevy S10, which was the mm-hmm. compact pickup truck. People were lowering these things, mm-hmm. throwing great wheels and tires on them. And it was a great culture. That was mostly California. Mm-hmm. You saw less of it here. But it's really cool, and I hope people enjoy driving these because these are supposed to be fun to drive.
Yeah, and that was the genesis of this, is they were kind of looking at how people were modifying their trucks and what they were doing to it. And they were like, why don't we make this a factory thing?
There was so much that came out of Los Angeles, mostly in the 60s and into the 70s and 80s, but like lowering cars mm-hmm. and then doing fun things mm-hmm. with the suspension. And it'd be great to see that happen again. And I don't think L.A. is any more like a center of that kind of fun stuff. But you remember here, 90s and into when we started writing about cars, where like the Honda tuner movement mm-hmm. was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And people were just doing crazy stuff with Civics. Yeah. And one of the things that people used to do is scout around for wrecked Acuras, pluck the engines from those, and slam them into their Civics. And it's so cool. And then they had the ridiculous exhaust that made you want to call the police. But still, someone was having fun with the car, so that was cool.
Yeah, but this is just, it's a really well-appointed, well-designed, you know, the interior appointments are really well done with, like, the blue and the, like, lime green stitching and accents. And I just, there wasn't much that I didn't like about this truck. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I want to drive that.
Yes.
I need to do that. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk to Ron Howard, CEO of Kindred Motorworks, in just a moment.
Awesome.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill.
Hi.
Hi. And we're talking electric stuff today.
We are.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, mourning the loss of the F-150 Lightning and the VW ID. Buzz.
Yes.
Steve and Johnny, I was on with them Saturday night, Chicago radio here at WGN Radio, and they couldn't get past the dot in ID.
It is a little bit annoying.
ID dot buzz.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's an editor's nightmare.
It is. It's very E.E. Cummings.
All right. On the phone with us is Rob Howard. He is the CEO of Kindred Motorworks, and this is a very cool company that is taking old cars, making them new cars, mm-hmm. and in some cases, electrifying them.
Yes.
Very excited to have this conversation today. Rob, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here. You are, let's talk a little bit about your past before we get into Kindred Motorworks. You are supposed to be something of a logistics expert, a supply chain guy.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty lucky to be in the spot I am to start this company. I founded a company that was a big supply chain company, so I learned a lot about that. That's really important for Kindred. And then I also founded a company that was a pure technology company, you know, so I'm not afraid to build technology. But more importantly, I've been restoring cars in my garage for the last 30 years at night when my wife and kids go to bed. So I've been really lucky to kind of have that all line up for me.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a moment, because one of the vehicles you guys are working with is something that you were restoring in your garage, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've been through a cycle. I'm a Mustang guy, and I was a station wagon guy and a Bronco guy kind of all the way through.
So to some degree, are you lucky that you're out of the mainstream automotive business right now during supply chain nightmares? I understand that Mary Barra, for example, was a big supply chain person before she climbed the ladder at GM. But it just seems like supply chain people right now are just losing their hair and not sleeping at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the uncertainty. You know, if there was a kind of a solid policy with a date in the future to get in line around, that's manageable. But when it's kind of a moving target, it's hard for everybody.
Yeah.
You know? So I think uncertainty kind of makes it a little uncomfortable for the supply chain part of what we do, for sure.
Well, on behalf of enthusiasts and people who just like old cars, I want to thank you for doing what you're doing right now. Tell us about Kindred Motorworks.
Yeah, for us, I mean, these old cars are so beautiful and they're frankly immortal, but
yeah,
it's hard to have joy around them sometimes. I've experienced this a lot, where you kind of find reasons not to drive that old car. Is it going to start? Is it going to stop? Is it going to smell my garage up? And I think that's the real motion behind Kindred is how do we get these cars to the point where you just want to drive them and you want to enjoy the ownership experience and the driving experience without worrying about all those challenges that these old cars have. So we put a ton of work model by model, figuring out that model, setting it so it's a standard build, and then rebuilding that same car, modernizing it the same way every time. And then we go do additional model, add new models every year so that we kind of expand our lineup.
Well, the lineup you have now is pretty exciting, and I recommend that people check out your Facebook page and your website because there's really great pictures there and some video, too. But you guys started with the Bronco, or did you guys start with the Chevy 3100?
We started with the Bronco. Yeah, okay. They made 500,000 of these Broncos, but they were never that great. They're cool.
they certainly look cool.
Yeah. But, you know, they leak and they're three on the tree or four speeds and they're a challenge. They kind of have a death wobble when you get on the highway. So we put all the work into eliminate all those problems, you know, until they were just perfect, you know, and then we put them into production and now we build that car, deliver those every week. And it's just a modernized car, you know, disc brakes and rear view camera and a great stereo system. It has seatbelts. It has headrests. You know, you're really willing to drive. And when you drive it, you really can just enjoy driving it. And then we did our EV Bronco. So looks really the same, but it's electric. But it is all wheel drive, which is kind of interesting. It has independent suspension on all four wheels. So the drive experience is much more modern in the EV Bronco than it is in that solid axle kind of older Bronco. And then we're introducing our EV bus next month. So we'll deliver our first customer, the EV buses. Those are the 54 to 68 kind of joy machine in the split windows. Yep.
I have a feeling you may sell more of yours than Volkswagen sold of theirs when they brought their retro version back. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about with the non-electric Bronco, what do you do to the powertrain? I mean, do you completely swap out the engine and the transmission and just kind of talk about, in addition to modernizing, you know, with the rear view camera and things like that, like what do you do underneath the hood?
No, that's a great question because I think the original drivetrain in that car is kind of touch and go. We go full on. We pick an engine right off the Ford Performance line for the Mustang. So it's the Coyote. It's that 5-liter engine, and we squeeze it in there. And we also do an automatic 10-speed transmission. So it's a really smooth driving experience. So, you know, it's got a nice growl to it and it has enough power to kind of haul that 4,000 pound truck. But it's not stupidly powerful for no reason, you know? So we tune it. We could actually call it the Whole Foods tune so that it's like a reasonable driving experience. Hidden in there is a more aggressive tune if you want to get access to that tune as well.
So for customers who want to buy one of the vehicles, you know what? Let's talk about all the ones you guys are doing. So you're doing the Bronco, you're doing the Chevy 3100, which is a beautiful pickup truck, and then the VW bus. Are you looking to add anything, or is that the full lineup right now?
We're going to add two models every year. So in January, we'll announce our next model, the sports car. And every year, we are essentially kind of like a vehicle development company. You know, so we have a team of engineers here. And Jill, to your question, we engineer the crap out of this thing, right? So that it handles really well. So there's lots of engineering on the driving dynamics, the braking dynamics. We take it to Death Valley, up to the snow. So we do much more like OEM level testing instead of just throwing together aftermarket parts. And it kind of differentiates us, our engineers. I tell our customers, ask whoever you're going to buy your car from how many engineers they have on staff. And that'll tell you the quality of the car. It becomes really important on the EV side. Mm-hmm. So this vehicle development is like a flywheel. We do a new model every 6 months and spend a ton of time on the testing, build 5 or 6 prototypes of each one of these cars, add tons of miles on it, go through all those tests before it ever enters in production. But it keeps Kindred very fresh, and we grow not by selling a ton of each individual model, but by adding new models to the lineup.
Do you intend to keep the Bronco in the lineup as you add new models?
Oh yeah, I think it's the best Bronco in the world, and it's something that we're really good at. We've got the supply chain figured out. We've figured out what not to do and what to do. You know, we know there's 1,253 parts in that car. We know the torque on every bolt, And the quality of that car is like off the charts compared to how I restore my cars in my garage, for example.
Thinking of the Bronco or just any of the vehicles in your product line, do you guys source the donor vehicle or do customers bring them to you?
Yeah, we source those. You know, we have a sourcing program. You know, we buy really Broncos that are in tough condition. If you look in our boneyard, which is out the back, it's kind of a fun place to check out. It's the quality of the vehicles coming in versus the quality of vehicles going out. But we really want this to be a seamless experience for the customer. So you don't have to go hunt and peck for the car and then get it registered and ship it and all that stuff. We're a lot more like an OEM, you know, where we buy the car, we tear it down, we rebuild it the same way, we curate the design of the car, there's no customization, you can choose your color, a couple options here and there, we offer warranty, we're registered dealers, we do all the transactions. So the customer experience is a lot like an OEM, really for the first time, instead of just buying on bring a trailer where you don't know the history of the car, you know, we've got it fully modernized and rebuilt and warranty behind it. So different experience for the buyer.
Cool. Do me a favor. Compare and contrast the gasoline-powered version of the Bronco with the electric version, including price.
Yeah, the price is $199 for the gas and $225 for the electric.
Okay.
From a performance perspective, there's that Coyote engine, I believe, is about 460 horsepower. The electric is a little more horsepower. It's actually capable of 600 horsepower, but we've tuned it down to make it a really comfortable driving experience. You don't want that thing bucking when you hit the accelerator, you know. So we've tuned it down to actually 403 horsepower for the electric. But the driving experience is quite different. I mean, the primary thing is when you go over like railroad tracks in the gas Bronco, it drives like a truck. Short wheelbase, big tires, you know, kind of bounces a little bit over that thing. And when you go around turns, you know, solid axles, so you feel a little bit the turns on that one. On the electric, because of the independent suspension and all-wheel drive, it drives like a modern car. So you'll go over those railroad tracks, you won't even notice them, right? So they are two different things. The growl from the gasoline one is really cool, but the performance and simplicity of the electric one and reliability is also really cool.
Now, if people want to test drive a Motorworks vehicle, a Kindred Motorworks vehicle, how do they do that? Do they have to come out to you guys in California?
They can do that. We also have a road show kind of bouncing around the country to cool places kind of continuously.
Cool.
But we've also got some dealers now. Because Kindred is standardized, dealers can actually carry a Kindred car and offer service because we have all the parts in stock. We have all the work instructions. Unlike a kind of one-off Restomod car, you can actually buy a Kindred from a local dealer who offers service. The same place you bought your last car and so did your dad, you're starting to be able to buy a Kindred from that same experience. So you can do test drives in Texas, in New York with our dealers there. And this year we're expanding our dealership network. So just to get the cars close to customers, because I think driving the cars is really important. And we want to make that happen.
You mentioned a roadshow. Do you have? Do you know off the top of your head what your upcoming stops might be?
Well, we'll be at CES, which is coming up in early January. We'll be at NADA, which is the dealer conference in Las Vegas. We'll be at the Aspen Food and Wine Festival. We'll be at the Monterey Car Show every year.
Okay.
So that's cool. So how many vehicles have you guys sold so far?
We're at 100 on the gas Bronco. And then on the EV Bronco, it went into production last year. We're at a couple dozen, and the bus starts deliveries next month, as I mentioned.
Wow, congratulations. That's nice. There's a story about you restoring your own Chevy 3100 pickup, and that's sort of how this company got started.
Yeah, so it's actually a 57 wagon, but you know, I was in my garage. It took me 4 years to restore that car. I ended up having to use like five different vendors, you know, one for the paint, one for the engine, you know, one for the install the glass, had to help me install the glass. It's just a lot of work. And when I was done, I was disappointed. You know, it stalled all the time because it was not fuel injected. The brakes were pretty crappy. The steering column was way too close to my chest. You know, I was like, ah, everybody else is like, that's really cool, Rob. And I was disappointed. But I knew that if we standardized it the way we do it here and bring all the in-house, that we could do it much, much better, right? So we do all the paint in-house, all the upholstery in-house, all the craftsmanship is done here. So that really was one of those, you know, found in the garage stories where, and trying to keep track of the parts, you know, they would, I would take a part off, I'd label it, and then find out later I couldn't even read what I wrote and couldn't know what the part was. And I would order a new part and it would come in, you know, the wrong part. And then when I try to go find it, it was just a mess, you know. So we have a lot of technology here that keeps all the supply chain organized, all the work instructions known. It's just a very, very beautiful facility and organized in a way that was informed by working on cars myself.
In the late mid-80s, my father rebuilt the transmission of a 79 Thunderbird in the driveway. Mm. Car was up on blocks. He walked to work for a month, but it took him 1 month to do that. And I think he just kept losing parts.
Oh. Well, that's how I learned to do this. Right? When I grew up in Philly, and when our cars broke down, we had to fix them, right? Yeah. So I learned just enough to make me fearless around working on a car. And these days, it's near impossible with the modern cars, but these cars that we focus on, you can actually work on them. It's a very rewarding experience to work with your hands like that.
That's very cool. I have one real quick question, but we're running out of time, Rob. The Volkswagen Microbus, are those hard to find? Are you guys already sourcing some? And the pictures you have are like of the 21 window units, which I know are very expensive. Are those going to be pricey when you guys finally have them done?
Well, we convert these vehicles these VW buses to electric. We also convert them to 21 windows, right?
So
if you have a 21 window bus, you know, that's a very valuable piece of equipment.
But yeah,
we're not trying to trick anybody into anything. We're converting this to electric and converting it to 21 window. So we start there. But they made 2 million of these buses from 1954 to 1968.
I had no idea there were that many.
Yeah, so they're out there.
Okay.
They're in rough shape, though. When you see our boneyard for these cars, you know, it's not pretty, right?
I want to come out and just to see your boneyard. I think that sounds really cool.
It is, and actually, if you want to get a hint at what the next model is, you'll come by and kind of see what I'm driving.
Right? Oh, all right, worth noting. Rob, how can people find out more about Kindred Motorworks?
Well, our website's pretty comprehensive, kindredmotorworks.com. And then I think you'll see us on various events around the country, and we'll do some press on our dealers as they emerge for the coming year.
Well, that sounds cool. We'll have to talk to you again when you guys add more models.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for the opportunity, folks.
Rob, thank you so much for your time.
Take care.
That was Rob Howard, CEO of Kindred Motorworks. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. How are you?
I'm doing good.
That was a cool conversation. I'm interested in that company.
I think that is definitely fascinating, and I love the idea of... I hate it. I hate disposable things, and I love the idea that they're taking something that is in rough shape.
Yes.
And bringing it back.
Yes. Exactly. I actually think that can... like. There's a lot of minivans, the old Volkswagen microbuses, mm-hmm. that are not in good shape. So I was really worried that they were actually taking old 21 window buses. And for people who don't know, those windows are around the top of the bus. They're, mm-hmm. they're almost like sunroofs, but they run along the side top. And they're really cool and very valuable.
Yeah.
And a lot of those in good condition will sell for $100,000. So I was wondering, ooh, what would this cost electrified?
Right.
Too much money. But no.
So do you have guesses on what you think his next model is going to be?
Oh, I have no idea.
I'm voting for like a Mustang.
Mustang is good.
Because he seems to be very Ford-centered, maybe? I don't know.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of trashed first-generation Mustangs.
Yeah.
That are just rotting away places.
Yeah.
That are parts cars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get one of those restored to glory,
mm-hmm.
that's cool. All right, you've got social media news to get through?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah, so TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Threads, all the things, Blue Sky. You can find me at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag CarDuJour. So if there's something I didn't mention and you're wondering if I'm on it, just search for the hashtag CarDuJour, and you will probably find me.
I don't know why, but Blue Sky seems to have come to life again.
Oh.
It was kind of dull for a while.
Okay.
And it seems to have sprung back to life. And maybe it's just the auto circle that I'm hanging in.
Could be.
I don't know.
Could be. I kind of dip in and out of Blue Sky. I'm not as consistent on that as you are. I've been focusing a lot on TikTok and Instagram lately because I make money there.
We have friends of the show on X.
Yes.
So I spend a lot of time there.
Yes, and I should spend more time on X.
So, alrighty. So you got that done?
Yes.
All right, it's quiz time.
Okay.
I have two quizzes here. I worked ahead this week.
Okay.
I think we'll go with this one first. Are you ready?
All right.
I'm starting over. Was it a Mercury?
Was it a Mercury? Got it.
I think we may have done this before, but lots of models.
I am not super well versed in Mercury. So this will be interesting.
Mercury is super interesting division. And one of the interesting things that happened to Edsel, people might remember the Edsel disaster, mm-hmm. late 50s, was that Ford was desperately trying to squeeze something between Ford and Mercury. And Mercury then was kind of like Buick, but maybe a little bit less expensive and a little bit less prestigious.
Okay.
And Ford was Ford, but Pontiac and Dodge were going crazy at the time when the Ford people decided they wanted to do Edsel. So they squeezed Edsel between Ford and Mercury,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of squeezed Edsel too high up there, like thinking, we're going to make a lot of money off this. We have to raise the prices. And it got very confusing.
Got it.
For customers. So, yeah, Mercury was sort of the cap on where you could put Edsel, and they didn't cap it very well.
Got it.
But Mercury was around for years.
Yes.
Sometimes doing some great styling. All right, I'm going to give you a model. You just have to tell me if it was or was not a Mercury model. Are you ready?
I am as ready as I will ever be.
Five questions total plus the bonus question. Bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Yes, and if I get 3 out of 5, I win.
You win.
Yes.
All right, ready?
Okay.
Panther. Was there a Mercury called the Panther?
No.
Pardon my sniffles.
I'm going to say no.
There was not. You're okay. On the board. There was a Panther platform.
Okay.
Which was the last rear-wheel drive platform that Mercury had. That was the Crown Vic, the police car.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, Mercury Grand Marquis. They were on that platform. Nice job. You've got one.
Okay.
Mercury Cougar.
Yes.
Yes.
I had a friend who had one of those.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cougars were cool.
Yeah.
Cougars were at one time early on based on the Mustang. And that might have been when they were coolest.
Yeah.
They were just kind of sporty, but they were more chrome, a little more luxurious, kind of a GT thing instead of a pony car. They were cool.
Yeah,
You've got 2 points.
I was wondering if you would say Cougar. I'm like, the one I know for sure is the Mercury is a Cougar.
Well, I'm sure you know this one.
Okay.
LN7.
Yeah, I totally know that.
Does producer Randy know this one? Yeah.
Oh, he's shaking his head. He said no.
It's a little obscure.
LN7.
LN7.
So it was a real vehicle, but the question is whether or not it was a Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah. It's a weird history. So I'm sure you've heard of the Ford Escort.
Yes.
The Ford Escort was truncated down to a little sports coupe mm-hmm. for a couple of years called the EXP. So it was the Escort EXP.
Okay.
And that vehicle was sold as a Mercury for mm-hmm. 1982 and 1983 called the LN7. And it's kind of a good-looking little hatchback-y thing.
Okay.
That no one wanted.
Okay.
And it wasn't actually sporty. It just looked sporty.
Okay.
All right. You've got two.
Two. All right.
Pacer.
Wasn't that an AMC? An AMC Pacer?
I'm just going to say yes.
So I'm going to say no, that it wasn't a Mercury then.
It was not, but it was an Edsel.
Okay.
So there was an Edsel Pacer, an AMC Pacer. So you've got three, right? You've got the
yes.
win.
Yes. Woo!
Nice job. Finally, Monarch.
I think yes.
There was.
Yes.
Yeah, the Monarch, I think that name got used on as a trim level in the 50s, but it was the analog for the Ford Granada.
Okay.
So two truly terrible vehicles.
Tell me how you really feel.
Available between 1975 and 1980.
Okay.
The Monarch.
Okay.
When I started working at a gas station in 1982, mm-hmm. it seemed like all we ever did were power steering pumps for Ford Granadas and Mercury Monarchs.
Okay.
And like everyone in Palatine had one. And they were sick of their Fords, and they went out and started to buy General Motors midsize cars. So eventually everyone had a Cutlass.
Okay.
Like this happened while I was pumping gas. I just watched this transformation of the Chicago suburbs as we moved from crappy Fords to not very well-built GMs.
So from crappy Fords to crappy GMs? Yeah. That's what I'm hearing you say.
But the GMs were way better looking.
Okay.
Like the Cutlass Supreme, that was all right.
Okay.
Monte Carlo, good looking. All right, you got three. We're going to do the bonus question just
I
for fun.
Four.
You got four?
Yes.
All right, you got four. Whatever.
The only one I missed was the LN7 or whatever that was.
LN7.
Yes.
You'll have to look at a picture. It's a good-looking car, and the ads were really very 80s. A lot of big hair.
I'm Googling it right now.
Are you?
Yes.
All right. Waiting.
Waiting, waiting, waiting.
Mercury LN7.
Okay, I'm not showing. So what's ironic is the story that showed up on it was from Motor Authority, which no longer exists.
Hmm.
That was the number one hit.
It's an obscurity. It's absolutely worth knowing about.
Hmm.
It's a styling exercise more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look awful.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Do you know what was happening around that same time? The Fiero.
Okay.
And the Fiero was far more convincingly sporty. Mid-engine, more power.
Okay.
All right. Bonus question. Are you ready?
Always.
Campbell Soup.
Mm-mm, good.
Available in 100 plus varieties.
Okay.
I need you to tell me which of the following is fake.
Okay.
I need you to tell me the fake Campbell Soup variety.
I can't remember the last time I had Campbell Soup, so okay.
All right. I don't know why this has been topical for me, but I've been talking about Campbell Soup too much.
Okay.
Oh, you know why? Because there is that executive at Campbell Soup who made fun of poor people who buy Campbell Soup.
Well, that was not very on brand.
Yeah, but don't get recorded saying that.
No, no.
All right. Double noodle, spicy nacho cheese, mutton gumbo, vegetarian vegetable soup.
So I know that spicy nacho, I'm pretty sure that is.
Spicy nacho cheese.
Yes.
You're saying that's real?
Yeah, because I feel like we bought that one year accidentally making my mom's green bean casserole, and it was an abysmal failure. Because she puts cheese soup in her green bean casserole instead of like a creamy whatever that most people put in it. So I feel like that one's real. What was the first one?
Double noodle.
And is this just in the United States or is this like worldwide?
I don't know the answer to that, but I assume it's U.S.
Okay. Then I'm going with mutton.
Mutton gumbo?
Yeah.
Saying that's the fake?
That's the fake.
That is the fake.
I know. I'm like, nice Americans job. Don't do mutton.
You got 4 plus 1. There you go.
I got 5.
Here's a question. The vegetarian vegetable soup.
Yes.
That's actually labeled vegetarian. It says it wasn't the regular vegetable soup.
It probably used a chicken or a beef
broth.
Oh,
maybe, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Maybe. All right, I signed this. This is for you.
I learned some, like, I go through phases of my, food, just food cycles or whatever. And I went through a vegan phase when I learned that not all sugar is vegan. Because I feel like they use animal bones to granulize the sugar or something.
I've never heard this.
Yeah, and I had never heard it either, and I was just like fascinated by it.
Like Jell-O.
Yeah.
Not vegetarian.
No, or vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah, but things that you are have any kind of animal touching at all is not vegan, but it, you know, like eggs could be vegetarian, even though it's product of an animal. But
you know, I have a complaint about Bombay chopsticks.
Okay.
Their menu is carefully labeled for like hot and spicy.
Uh-huh.
Like watch out.
Uh-huh.
Also, I had that thing happen at an Indian restaurant again where they asked me how hot I wanted it.
Oh.
Yeah. And if you are a white guy in an Indian restaurant and you tell them you want it hot.
Don't do
that. You will suffer.
You will suffer a lot.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's wonderful suffering.
Usually medium spicy is like the right amount of spicy.
Well, see, my wife and daughter are actually yelling at me. So, yeah. But I went with the hot.
Okay.
I had this delightful breaded paneer. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It was so good. But halfway through, I did have to pause and just reflect on my choices.
Well, have you ever been to Maharaj?
No.
So this is in Northbrook, and it's a really, really good Indian restaurant. I had dinner there about a week ago, and it was like the same thing. The guy was like, "What kind of spicy do you want?" And I was just like, "We like spicy, but..." We were essentially saying, but we're white. What do you think?
I do always feel like I'm being challenged.
Right. And he was just like, I think medium spicy is probably appropriate. And he's like, and if that's not good enough for you, I will bring out chili oil sauce. And we're like, perfect.
Yeah, they're just looking at me like, middle-aged, overweight white guy. Are you really ready for Indian restaurant hot?
Right. The Spice Room in Chicago, you want to talk about Indian hot? Like, everything there is like super spicy.
Yeah. By my old office, there's a place called Tava.
Okay.
Did you and I ever go there?
No.
Fantastic. Little storefront. I'm just throwing it out there to give them a little play. Tava.
Okay. Tava.
Great little Indian restaurant. Oh, it just smells so good in the parking lot. Mm. All right. I did a little thing on X.
Okay. A little thing? A little poll?
It was a poll.
Okay.
P-O-L-L.
Not P-O-L-E?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Because we were doing a lot of ethnic stuff, so I just wanted to be clear.
Got it.
Anyway, which brand has the best looking crossovers? I'm going to give you four brands. Are
okay.
you ready? BMW, Chevy, Land Rover, Lincoln.
Can I say none of the above?
Would you say that?
I think Genesis has the best looking crossovers.
Oh, I didn't even think of Genesis.
Okay, so say
they were a little Baroque to me.
Okay.
A little curvy, a little overwrought.
I
love Genesis vehicles.
They're unique.
I don't know if I love the styling. BMW, Chevy, Land Rover, Lincoln.
Best looking. I'm like, I really don't like any of those. Maybe Chevy.
That was my pick. And I've recently, and I don't know if people are even looking at Chevys yet, because it's been a couple of years since they started redesigning stuff.
Yeah, since they actually started doing a good job again.
Well, yes, actually, in design. I mean, Chevys were kind of looking plain.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I think the Trailblazer, I think the Trax.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the Blazer. I think those are great-looking trucks.
I agree.
But anyway, Chevy came in last, 9.5%. Number one,
mm-hmm.
and this isn't wrong, I think, you know, in my opinion, Lincoln.
Okay.
40%. And all the Lincolns look good.
They just look very classic.
Not only that, that look is starting to age, in my opinion. I think they look great, and I think they look like Land Rovers. Land Rover came in second, and then BMW came in third. BMWs look okay.
Well, BMW, the downfall there is the grill. People are just very opposed to the grill.
They keep pissing people off with those ridiculous grills.
I had the X3 a couple weeks ago, and I actually not like the grill. I think they did a better job of not making it look like beaver teeth.
I think they're backing off of that.
Yeah.
Lexus is backing off of the spindle grill.
Yeah, a little
slowly.
Bit. Yeah.
And they're doing like body color stuff with it.
Yeah. The new grill on the RX, I really like, where it has like the body color like morphing down into the grill.
You like that?
On the top. I do.
It seems indefinite to me. There's something about it that makes me want to put up borders and walls.
Oh,
like I need to get a straight edge and kind of clean it up.
Nope. I like it.
Yeah. But I think that the new Chevy's not getting the love they deserve.
Yeah.
And that they might over time.
Yeah. You know, I really like, a couple years ago, I had the opportunity, and we had this discussion. We've had this a couple times now. I drove the Trax, and that was like my favorite vehicle, I want to say, of 2024 that I'd driven, because I was just like, it looked good. It drove well. It was priced well. And I had a friend, you know, last year who was buying a new car. She was like, what should I buy? And I'm like, Chevy Trax. And lo and behold, she actually took my advice and went and bought a Chevy Trax.
I have a question for you. You just mentioned that was your favorite vehicle of 2024.
I think it was 2024.
Are we in any way obliged to have favorite vehicles every year?
No.
Like Cart Stuff Podcast but favorite vehicles?
There's
so much of that out there.
There is. I think that there are always vehicles that strike me as significant or interesting, but I don't know that they would necessarily be my favorite vehicle. Like the Lucid Gravity. Like that was a very significant and interesting vehicle that I drove, but I don't know that that was my favorite vehicle of the year.
Well, the Lucid Air, for example, is my Indian food in a car.
Okay. Right? It's spicy?
Kind of. Like, what a wonderful car. Uh-huh. What a great car. It's beautiful. Uh-huh. It's dynamic. It's fun to drive. It's comfortable once you're in it. But that once you're in it is my problem. I don't fit into it, and it's really hard for me to squeeze through the door. So it pains me to drive it.
Right.
Like eating stuff that's supposed to be medium hot food in an Indian restaurant. I just brought the whole show around. Now.
You did I tied a really the good job together. Of like tying a little bow there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we've got a couple minutes. Do you have a vehicle off the top of your head that you just think is probably one of the best vehicles you drove this year?
Maybe the Polestar 3.
Okay.
What a fantastic vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a tidy-sized, mid-sized crossover that does everything electric right. The only thing about it is, and it's not Tesla extreme, but it does pull way too many controls into the center stack, into the touchscreen.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that, but what a wonderful vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And not even crazy money, but it is expensive.
Yeah.
Also, I'm driving the Polestar 4 right now, $4,500 leather package.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the $4,500. I'm not feeling it.
Okay.
But
okay.
I love this vehicle for the 5 minutes I've driven it.
And can you get into it better than the Lucid Air?
Very easily.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I had no problem with either of the Polestars.
Yeah. I would say probably one of the most significant vehicles I think I've driven this year is the Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't love the Leaf, but I liked it a lot. And I think it's going to matter a lot because price point became so much more important now in the EV world.
Yeah. I think the price point and what you get for the vehicle, and I feel like, and we have a guest who's going to be coming on in a couple weeks talking about the Easter eggs that are in the Nissan Leaf. And I just think they did a lot of nice, clever things with this vehicle.
A friend of ours and listener of the show, he's a colleague, Marty Dench, believes that the Leaf's going to be a very big deal.
I think it
is. Hey, Marty, thanks for listening. But he's very active on X.
Yeah.
So good guy, Marty. All right, we've run out of time.
Okay.
All right, big thanks to Rob Howard of Kindred Motorworks for joining us today. Thank you, Jill. Mm-hmm. Thank you, producer Randy. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, happy holidays.
We'll talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.